Welcome to Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life. Each month, Galley Table Storytelling hosts a live event in the Kodiak community. Storytellers are given 7 minutes to tell a personal story related to a monthly theme. Tonight, we're going to hear those stories.
Please enjoy the show and join me in welcoming our first storyteller to the stage. Sarah Phillips is originally from Normal, Illinois, because, well, someone had to be. Sarah came to Kodiak 2 years ago with her husband and their two dogs. She really wanted to check off the Alaskan adventure box in her life. Now she loves it so much she doesn't ever want to leave. You'll probably recognize her voice from the endless radio commercials and talk shows she does for her job at the Chamber of Commerce. So now you can put a face to the voice. You're welcome. Galley Tables is Sarah's favorite Kodiak winter event, and she's excited to be telling a story for the first time tonight. Please welcome Sarah Phillips.
Thanks for being here, everybody. This is super packed and not what I planned for. So some of you may remember a story my husband told. It was one about where we met, we snuck out, and we caught catfish out of tires. Eventually, we fell in love, got married, and lived happily ever after. But between the got married and happily ever after, in our story, there's a really evil villain. This villain is super deceitful. He is able to manipulate absolutely everyone he needs, and it's just horrible. Of course, I'm talking about my husband's 8-pound, absolutely adorable miniature dachshund. So a little backstory here. He got his dachshund a couple years before we even met. And they were amazing together. The entire time we dated, 2 years, I would get to come down about once a month and visit. And every time, this dachshund ran to the door, he whacked his little butt, and he was just so excited to see me. He gave me kisses, he snuggled me. It was amazing. I loved him. Then Ryan and I got married, and I moved in, because that's what you do. And I gave this dog something he had never had before. They were called rules. And that's when we started fighting and when I learned a lot of lessons. The first lesson I learned from Bacardi. That's right, Bacardi the dog. Is don't name your dog after alcohol. It gets super embarrassing when your six-year-old nephew comes to visit, you send him home, and he goes and tells his teacher, I had so much fun at Aunt Sarah's this week. She doesn't like Bacardi. But I do. So the second lesson I learned in life with Bacardi is that he's a liar. Anytime this super cute puppy gets in trouble, me that gets him in trouble, he rolls over on his back because he has an audience, and he starts screaming, ar, 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 ar. Everyone thinks I abuse this dog. But I should have known. This is a dog that when Ryan and I are snuggled up on a couch holding hands, he will force his way between us. He literally puts his head between our hands to shove us apart. Then the rest of the night, he sits smugly on my husband's lap, glaring at me. So that's the next lesson I learned from Bacardi. He is not afraid to use force. He's also not afraid to use chemical and mental warfare. This one time, I was really sick. I could barely get off of our couch. And Bacardi actually really sweetly jumped up into my lap, and he looked at me really lovingly.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is it. This is the moment I've been waiting for. He has compassion. He feels bad for me. We can be friends after this. That's when he started peeing on me. And it hasn't stopped. Everywhere we move, he pees and poops under my side of the bed. That's when I learned never to let your guard down. So Bacardi grew up, he was born in Puerto Rico, spent a lot of time in the Virgin Islands, Florida, North Carolina, on the beaches. So he is this warm weather loving dog. So I decided to make a little revenge plan. And I decided we should move to Alaska. But it's kind of backfired. The cold fuels his rage. He barks more, he pees more, he humps everything. And I'm really not, he has never stopped barking since we moved here. So I'm not proud of this, but I started threatening this tiny, adorable little 8-pound dog. And I told him, if you don't make better life decisions, I will convince your father to give you up. That's what I said. And so this Christmas, a miracle fell in my lap. We had some friends move here. They have dachshunds, don't ask me why. So they moved here, but they couldn't take their dachshunds with them. So they actually asked us, can we borrow your dachshund for Christmas? So we packed up his stuff. He had his kennel, blanket, treats, dinner, and we dropped him off. And as we were leaving, we said, enjoy your new family, Bacardi. He lasted all of 6 hours. That's when Bacardi learned the grass is not always greener on the other side. Since he came home, he has been a perfect angel. So this evil villain that was in our life has since learned the error of his ways. And now my catfish-grabbing husband and I can get along with our happily ever after.
Emily Yakubuchi is originally from south of Boston, but she's lived all over and moved to Kodiak last June. She loves snow, cooking, and outdoor adventures with her retired sled dog, the beautiful and high maintenance Sultana. If I can introduce Emily.
A little over 10 years ago, I found out that I would get to spend my first winter in Alaska mushing dogs. And the woman that hired me, the manager of that kennel, she has some words of wisdom to impart. One of the most important being, never let go of the sled. And she also said, mushing is gonna be the best of the best and the worst of the worst, just so you know. And so this story that I'm gonna tell you is about one of the worst days that I had mushing in the 2 years I spent working at that kennel. It was at Denali National Park, so these dogs were not racing. We never did anything quickly. They're big dogs, they're all fluffy, they're very determined, varying degrees of intelligence. And we had spent a couple of weeks out on the Tuklat River, which is about 50 miles west of headquarters, if you're familiar with the park. It's very beautiful. We had been cleaning up the Tuklat debris on there, and we were ready to come home. So it was about this time of year. We had about 4 hours of daylight, but that was okay. We only had 10 miles to go, and it's on the river, so it should have been an easy day. The two other ladies that were working with me that summer were both named Jess. So Jess number one took off from the cabin, and within about 30 minutes, we had our first huge tangled dog bite. So bad that she actually called us for help, which we like, we never ask each other for help. You always just assume that the other people are dealing with their own shenanigans, and you just deal with it. So we were like, geez Louise. So we got her figured out, and she goes on. I left. I got through that section fine, but I hit this kind of notorious gulch filled with willows, and my dogs just got tangled, dogfight, all the way up this gulch. It must have happened at least 600 times in a quarter mile, I swear. You know, the puppies are screaming, everybody's fighting. I definitely cried. But I got to the top, and once you get out of that gulch, you're on the East Fork River, and you're kind of smooth sailing for the next 8 miles or so. And I made sure that the Jess behind me, she got through that section just fine too. So a couple hours go by, and everything appears to be fine. And I came around this big rock wall on the East Fork, and at that point, you come around this corner, and you can actually pretty much see the cabin. And you're like maybe a half mile, quarter mile away from the trail that goes off to the cabin. It's like, what could go wrong now? Everything should be fine. And I hear my radio. And this area is kind of a notorious radio den zone spot. So I'm on a line of sight channel. I call the Jess in front of me. She's like, we're at the cabin. Everything's fine. And I'm like, 254, did you try to call me? 254, did you try to call me? 254, 253 does not copy. Did you try to call me? She's like, lost my team. Oh, when did you lose your team? She's like, a while ago. Like, 254, did you get that sled tipped over? Is it upright? She's like, oh, it's upright. And I swear, right as I learned this information, all 12 dogs in my team went. And I turned around to you, and that team just comes ripping around that corner. And they saw that cabin team, and they're just hauling. And so I grabbed my little ice hook, which is the only mechanism you have on a sled to keep it stationary when there's nothing to tie it to when you're on a river and there's no trees. I had never used one before. I didn't have a lot of confidence in it, but I was like, ooh. So we're on the ice, kicked it, put my sled over on it, and I was basically like, Chinook, my lead dog, please be good. And we ran in the opposite direction. So like I said, these are big dogs, so that's like 600, 700 pounds of dog running at me, and I had never caught one of these sled dog team before. And I was like, I'm going like real fast, I don't think I can jump on that sled. I don't think there's going to be two of those dog teams, so I decided to trust for their love in me, and I just stood directly in front of them and hoped they wouldn't run me over. So they did actually sidestep just enough to not kill me, and it made them kind of like skitter on the ice, and they slowed down, so I like leapt onto the sled and pulled myself up and stopped the team, and I was like, this is it, I'm the hero. But unbeknownst to me, Chinook had turned my team 180 degrees to watch the show, so now both dog teams just stopped looking at each other. So the lead dogs are like, I don't know, 30 yards apart, just like looking at each other. There's nothing holding that other team except for this ice hook. I have no idea how it was holding. But I knew it wasn't going to hold for that much longer, and I have absolutely no idea what to do. There's going to be a 20-some dog pile up any moment now. But just number one had been listening to this song on the radio. She started walking, and she pops up on the river and goes, look, Chinook. And she ended up being the brilliant, wise old man that he is, was. Turn that team around again, and then the ice hook popped, and off they went to safety. I'm like, all right, now all I have to do is go back and rescue Jess number two in the sled that I didn't pack, and the sun's going down because it's taken so long to get this far. So I'm like, 254, where's your headlamp? 254, where's your headlamp? Like, right now. So I start taking stuff out of the bag. 254, where's your headlamp? I go on the repeater, I need your headlamp. Nothing. Like, everything in her bag is out on the ice, and it's pretty dark. And I'm like, I just held that key down. Headlamp, 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 headlamp. And she finally comes in, my headlamp? Oh, it's in my hoodie bag. Who keeps her headlamp in her hoodie bag? Like, hoodie's like, keep it on the dog seat. So that was nerve-wracking, but I got it on. It's completely dark. We go rescue Jess. There was more calamity. She fell in some water. She kicks the sled. She goes, I hate mushing. I hate dogs. And then she became the assistant kennels manager. So we made it back to the cabin. Like I said, like nobody was seriously injured. We couldn't talk about that day for a long time. More stuff happened that I haven't mentioned here. But we did learn some good life lessons. One being really never let go of the sled. They will take advantage. Also, keep your headlamp on your person. You guys are probably all like, duh, it's Alaska, it's dark. But I didn't know that, I was new. So yeah, do it. Also, I love dogs, I already knew that. But dogs are wonderful, they make everything better, and then they ruin it. And then they make it better. And I guess the like overall like lesson is those things that you think are like the absolute worst, the worst date ever, 10 years later, you can look back and be like, you know, that didn't happen. If I didn't get put in that absurd position that I never imagined myself in, then you wouldn't know that you were capable of doing things that you never imagined. It makes you do even more crazy stuff in the future. So thanks a lot, guys.
Veteran storyteller. We can always count on him for a story. He labels himself as an amateur politician and a professional fish mortician. He has lived in Kodiak for the length of his memory, so at least 2 weeks.
Thanks, Esme. Well, since we have grab season coming up pretty soon, I thought I would tell the story of the worst craft season of all time, which I happen to be present for. It was a long time ago, so long ago that, and the names, don't even worry about it, just because of what happened. It was so long ago that I was very young, that long ago, and rather naive about a few things. I learned a lot of things during that craft season. The first was that I took a job on a story boat, and that I had heard stories of craft crew members who had worked a single season on this boat and then went on to retire in places like Mexico for the rest of their short and painless lives. That's what I wanted. So I thought, this is the boat to be on. And we heard that the skipper who was coming on to run the boat was an up-and-coming young man and a real go-getter. So we were feeling pretty good about it. And by we, I mean that there were only two of us to rig the pots over on City Dock before the boat came into town. Because the skipper was down in some sunny part of the lower 48 getting his driveway poured, and the boat that we were going to get on was actually still out fishing. And it would only arrive in town just hours prior to the time we would have to load the pots and leave for the Bering Sea. Well, this sounded okay to me and Chief Becker, who was the person I was working with. And one thing I learned from Chief Becker is, always learn what the guy's real name is. Because he was introduced to me as Chief Becker, and I always assumed that someday I would learn his name, and it just never happened. And so I was forced to call him that, I introduced him to that, and everyone just, that was his name. And he got the name because he was the chief, kind of, he was our engineer, which meant he went around fixing and doing maintenance. And the Becker part was because he had this enormous nose. Really, a huge schnozola stuck right out there. And he had this sort of going around looking like kind of a bird. And so we called him Chief Becker, and it was a perfect name for him. But the real problem came when his wife arrived from the mainland. She was going to go with us to be our cook and our purser and take wheel watches. And he went to introduce her, and he just said, "Well, this is my wife, Terry." And so I thought maybe I was going to get her name. And I didn't know what else to say, so I just said, "I'm pleased to meet you, Mrs. Becker." And I thought, well, now I'll learn his real name, right? But to my surprise, she was delighted, and that was what we called her for the rest of the season. So, there it went. To this day, I do not know what those people's names really are. But we were out on the city dock sitting, and sometimes you get the slush that falls, and you get like 3 inches of the stuff. It's just solid enough to not go away. And then we had all our pots stretched out on the dock, and we're doing the fixing the tunnels and putting in the bios, which the bio is a small stretch on the web that's laced up with a piece of cotton. So that if you lose your pot at the bottom of the ocean, the cotton will rot away and a hole open the pot and the crab can crawl right out and it doesn't trap them later. And so we're going around doing the bios. And I had in the past, during longer seasons, when we replaced the bio in the middle of the season, just sort of laced the new bio over the top of the second bio. This is not technically legal. But the second bio is usually so soft by this time. And this is the case of these bios. You just touch them and they're like bios from the mummy days. They're made of papyrus and fell into dust. So I thought, why not just stitch a new one right over the old one and save myself a minute or so of time. Later in the season, the dark, terrible season, we pulled a pot, there was a note attached to it. And some of the guys said, "Look, we got a note. It's from the Wallstat." This is bad. You don't want to get a note from the Wallstat, ever. And it just informed us that we had found our double bio thing and we were bad boys and we'd be fine later in the season, which ended up being true. The lesson I learned there is don't take a 1 minute shortcut that will cost you $1,000. So we're finally getting ready. We get the boat pots. We're all stacked up on the end of the boat comes in and the skipper about the same time. What I learned from this experience was don't make assumptions about the condition of the boat or skipper sight unseen. The skipper came in drunk, and that was pretty much how we saw him for the rest of the season. And the boat came in, and this story boat had not apparently stopped fishing in a long time. There's a look of a boat that in the old days, most of the boats are pretty well maintained these days, but every once in a while, the boat would just go out for the next season, come back in, barely get rigged back up and go out for the next season. And this boat pulled up to the dock, and you could tell that it had been ridden hard and not put away yet. So we did our best to get it rigged up and ready for the crab season. One of the things that didn't happen though was brakes on the crane, which, believe it or not, brakes on the crane is a good thing to have. Unless you're going this way or that way, the crane just goes whichever way it wanted to go. And it was an older boat that didn't have the square chine and some of these spread walls that they have today, and it just rolled like crazy. I think the idea was the boat was supposed to keep you on your feet to see if you would pitch to one side of the boat or the other. So the crane would just slowly go around as we were running here, and it would always look like we were trying to make a left-hand turn. Well, it wasn't much of the season, but the one thing that did happen that really stuck with me was one of the fellows that we were out with, had been running here for a long time, and we were pretty tired, and we had put a crab bottle in the launcher, but in such a way that you couldn't get the door open because of the stack behind us. So we had to swivel the pots, we'd get the door open, bait it, and get it ready to launch. Well, crab launchers have these things called dogs, hydraulic dogs, and this is not a Labrador. This is a pair of hooks that emerge from out both sides of the launcher and grip the pot extremely firmly so you can never get away. So you can put the launcher up and shake it and do whatever you want with it. And some of these dogs are adjusted so they actually bend the pots in where they hit them over and over again. Well, you had to take the dogs off of the pot in order to spin it. And when we did, the guy on the other side of the launcher, who had just stuck his hand in the slot that the dogs run in, just for a second to help push some of the garbage out of the chute, got his fingers caught where the dogs come through down the slot. Well, the dogs just have barely enough room for itself to go through that slot. There's no room for this guy's fingers. And even though as powerful as the hydraulics were, the dog actually paused for a second before it went through his fingers, and that was it. Well, we had to take him to Port Mowler, and on the way in, Mrs. Becker fixed him up as best as she could. But I remember she brought out this morphine, and she was about to take it, and I was thinking, good, at least it's feeling uncomfortable. And he looked at the morphine and said, most of this morphine is out of date, I can't take it. And I have to say, at that point, the last time we were there was, yeah, give me the out of date morphine. I'll take my chances. But we worked three-handed after that for quite a while. Finally got a couple of three-handed. Sad and three-handed, a drunken skipper just going back and forth from here and there. We finally got a guy who came in to replace him, and he was extremely sad about the rest of our season, you know, kind of like disconsolate. And we got back to the town, and he shut himself into the head and wouldn't come out. I mean, for 12 hours. And you can only imagine what he was doing in there. I think he had taken whatever he had, whatever his settlement was, and spent it on something he probably shouldn't have. And Chief Pecker actually went in and took a shower and everything, but he was in there the whole time. He's like, yeah, I just went in there and showered. And he was obviously very sad, though, and I think the rest of us were thinking of our own things, and we never did take the time to talk to him about what was troubling him, and he ended up taking his own life at the end of that season. And, you know, I'm sorry I couldn't leave on the up note there, but I hear the duck quack. But I think that was the lesson that I learned that was stuck with me the longest, is sometimes it just takes a little time to talk to people, and it can make all the difference.
Our next storyteller is Coral Ann Plunzak. She arrived in Kodiak in 2006. She was brought by her mom and dad and grandparents and great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents. Basically, she was born here. For work, she does school work at Kodiak Middle School. She lives with her grandparents and her brother, who's in high school, and she loves hockey and drawing. And a wacky detail, she
is actually a veteran storyteller. She's probably our youngest, like, double storyteller ever in Galley Table history. Please welcome Coral.
Funny. I come up here all confident, and I'm just like, I'm gonna do this. And then I see how many people there are.
You got it.
So, you know how some people say you can't teach an old dog new tricks? It might actually apply to humans. So a couple years ago, I was on my way to the Anchorage airport from Anchorage. And it was like super blizzardy weather, and we were in our car, me, my brother, and my cousin. And my grandma was driving. So we're going down this really icy road, kind of slow, kind of. And up came this hill, which ended in an intersection, which is not very convenient for the conditions. As we're going down this hill, we try to stop, but the brakes don't work with the ice. So we're heading down this hill towards an intersection, which luckily we have a green light for. But this other guy doesn't quite understand that. So as we see this guy coming from our right, I think, is this guy really going to do what he's about to do? And yes, he did. He ran the red light, and we're about to get T-boned. And the next events, which dumped my grandma, Ninja Grandma. Slowed down for her, like in a slow-mo video, you know? And so she decides to go over this nifty curve to avoid this crazy driver coming from her right. And as we're going around the curve, we're completely silent, which is not actually very normal for children. We end up making it out of the intersection alive and with three whole children. Okay, so let's fast forward to this recent Christmas. Me and my brother were down in Tennessee, you know, y'all, yeehaw! And we're heading into this great, huge, big mall. I didn't even know malls could be that big. And it even has an even bigger parking lot. And my other grandma, whom is from, I actually don't remember. She's from somewhere else. And we're pulling into this parking lot, and it's completely packed. And we went through one of those aisles, and we're just like, maybe there's not a parking spot here. And there's this nifty little road dedicated right to the parking lot, because it's so big. And we're turning onto it, and this other guy behind us is coming at it, and he's not really slowing down very much. We're driving a truck, which has a bed and extra space in the back, you know? And we're turning, and this car doesn't really slow down still. And so Grandma keeps on turning, and I'm telling her, you should probably go a little bit faster so you don't run into this person. We almost did, almost. And the car behind us starts honking quite aggressively. And we make end of life. And no one gets hurt, not even the car. And we end up just having to pay for a parking place, which Grandma thought was quite inconvenient because she had to get out of the car. As we're finding our parking place, there's this family crossing this crosswalk. It's like two adults, three children. Grandma doesn't slow down. She's focusing on our parking place. She almost runs into the littlest kid. As she's rolling down her window to say sorry, the little kid turns around and shakes his fist and says, "Watch where you're going!" Which is actually kind of reverse. Because, you know, grandmas are supposed to yell at crazy driver children, "Hey, watch where you're going!" Me and my brother are laughing until we get to the mall. We still laugh about it today. So the lesson that I learned is that you should always watch where you're going. Pay attention. Don't text and drive at the same time. Don't play knick-knack on your thighs while you're driving. Or, as the kid put it, watch where you're going.
Alaska boy, and a dream chaser from as early as he can remember, and every dream had a soundtrack. The lessons learned are nothing ventured, nothing gained, and life is no better than who you share it with. Recently, Doc and Chris got married in the mountains of Montana with their combined 7 kids with offspring and Chris's 90-year-old mom doing the ceremony. And this confirmed the lessons. Here's Doc.
There were only 7 of us still awake at 4:30 in the morning after graduation while we were partying on a boat in the harbor. There were 10 boys and 10 girls in my class. We knew each other pretty well. My folks didn't show up at graduation. My mom only went through grade school. My dad went camping instead of commencement. So when I got home at 5 o'clock, the merit of a man in his world was your grip, your word, if you could do good construction, if you were a good fisherman, those are what made the metal of a person. So my folks had said earlier in life, they would hang in there together until I graduated. So when I walked in at home, there was packing going on. But right in the middle of the living room was this big suitcase that looked like it was from a Ted Turner late movie. It was kind of textured tan with 2 brown stripes around it. It was opened up, and in it was a whole bunch of logging clothes. Hickory shirts, Frisco jeans, quirks. And my dad came around the corner and said, "I got you a job at John Campbell Logging Camp." I said, "Dad, you shouldn't have." And I really meant it. And so that afternoon, the boat came in for groceries from the logging camp, and out on it I went. We had lived in logging camps. I knew what jobs you could bleed the most. One was setting chokers behind a D6 white cat. I did learn that I could bleed every day and still make work the next day. And by the time it hit the 4th of July, it was Independence Day, especially for me. I had about 4 paychecks in my pocket, and I knew the lesson I didn't want to be a logger. Obviously, my dad enjoyed it more than I did. So 2 buddies and I went up the Skeen River to go fishing, and while we were up there, we came up with this epiphany. We were going to join the Navy! It was called the Buddy Plan. What are we fighting for? Oh, we don't give a damn about Vietnam, because that was going on then. So we came back in the town and talked to a bunch of friends and found out who the recruiter was, and within a week, we were on a bus in downtown Anchorage, headed out for Almendorf. And you know, they had a thing called a courtesy pass then. They figured if you could be shot, you could also drink beer. So they would put a pass on you, and while you were waiting for your physical or getting shipped out, you got to go downtown and drink beer. And here's me and my 2 buddies raised in the Tlingit village watching black girls dance at the Crazy Horse. Woo! Well, that was an education in itself. And after about half the week was over, we had physicals. 100 guys lined up, just like in the movies. And when they got to me, they said, "Okay, 215, 6 foot. Hey, what's this? Tuberculosis as a child of the bone?" I said, "Yeah, I have my legs." He said, "All right, 4F, next." And here's my 2 buddies going off to go overseas to see the world. And I couldn't go. I put in for a waiver. I hung around Anchorage for quite a while, trying to get a pass to go. And while I was there, I was working in a salvage yard pounding copper that was being stolen off of the Aleutian chain, putting 55-gallon drums. A lot of nice guys. And I ran into Rick, one of the guys that was on the boat originally when the story started in Wrangell's Harbor drinking beer. And he said, "I'm going to college." Well, college wasn't in the language of my parents. And I thought, Rick isn't that bright. And he probably knew more than I did. And he said he was going to Sheldon Jackson at Presbyterian College down in Sitka. And I thought, you'll never make it. He said, "Why don't you come be my roommate? You can have a good time." Well, I applied, and to Sitka I went. I had a cousin at Sitka, had 6 kids in 5 years, married to a big Haida Indian, and when I got down there, he said, "We need a cork man on the boat. We're going to Excursion Inlet. You want to go?" I said, "Yeah, sure." Says, "You only get a half share." I said, "Ah, better than nothing," because I had about 10 days before school started. We got up there, they caught the purse in the wheel, and none of them could swim. I was a fish. I put that Victor Knox in my mouth and said, "Did I hear a full share?" They all go, "Yes." So, over I went, I cut the first out of the wheel, and I got a full share. Made 6,205 and a half days. Full year of tuition, room, and board in those days was 5,600. I still had money to burn. Well, when I signed up, I saw the small print. It said, "You cannot violate these things. If you do, and at schools go on 3 weeks, you lose your money and no refunds, and you're banned off campus." Well, they couldn't catch me because they weren't going to do anything. Well, it turned out I'm busted. It was my birthday. 3 weeks and 3 days after we had a party in my room, the dean of students came in after everybody left. There was a record player stuck and going, "I'm the Pied Piper. Can't you see? Can't you see? Can't you see?" And he came in, woke me up, found 2 beer cans in the wastebasket. Said, "Was there alcohol consumption here tonight?" And I was real kind of messed up. I'd make a vodka cranberry. I said, "You got me." Well, the next morning, my roommate and I were both booted out of school with a confession, "You have me." I didn't know what to do. I moved back to my cousin's garage. Then I got a job for a day helping him unload a freight truck that had a whole bunch of boxes of Babe Ruth candy bars that were wet, and I took that for pay for the afternoon. They were all white chocolate, you know. But I said, "We've got chocolate nuts to eat." And then I got a job digging ditches. That sounds horrible, but I dug a 1/4 mile ditch for a water line for an airplane company. And I learned that was a lesson. I didn't want to be an uneducated ditch digger. And then I got a job on a shrimp boat. And this was in the middle of winter, breaking ice off of the gunnels and sorting pink stripes and spots. 30-foot trawl out on deck, the wind blowing. I thought, by the end of Christmas came, my fingers looked like prawns. And I was headed over on the ferry to Sitka to see a couple buddies, and I heard that they were convening the Presbyterian Board of Missions on the Sheldon Jackson campus. I snuck in, and I got in the, because I was banned from campus. And when they went on recess, I walked out in the middle of the stage, and I dropped down on my knee, and I had full everybody's attention. I said, "Someone said you can't take a man's education. Well, I swear on my mother's heart that you kicked me out for beer cans that weren't mine." And they all looked like, "What's he talking about?" So anyway, the dean of students came up to me, and I said, "Honest, you'll never catch me drinking liquor again." He said, "Catch you is the word I'm worried about." And so anyway, he put his hand out, and he shook my hand and said, "Report to the registrar." Well, I went out the door, quick exit, didn't want him to change his mind, and first I laughed, I giggled, I'm in college again. Then I cried, and I went to the registrar. And after 2 years, I left Sheldon Jackson, and it only took 12 years more, because I had no assistants, 6 colleges and universities, and I became the first doctor in my family.
Bonnie Harris was born in Utah, raised in Wyoming, educated and married in Iowa. She lived in Indiana for nearly 20 years. Then her Hoosier husband brought her to Alaska, where he's the Coast Guard legal assistance attorney. Their breathtaking daughter and Mr. Explorer toddler grandson live here as well. Kodiak is a place of beauty and inspires her like so many others, and inspires her work. She spends as much time as she can writing fiction and hopes for publication one day. Please welcome Bonnie.
You know, I grew up with a mother who was a newspaper editor, so the written word. And my father was a college professor, so the spoken word. And I just grew up loving words. And that's why I love, in particular, fiction. I think the thing that fiction does more than anything else, the imagination kind of lowers the walls that you have built against lessons that you might learn. So this time, because the story is about the famous lessons learned, I brought a story that is about a man who might or might not learn a lesson. Maybe she will too. Anyway, it's called The Wait. They were waiting. Their college son's plane was en route after repairs and no news about when it was going to get here. So they waited in baggage claim. She untied and retied her orange paisley scarf over her hair. She was a patient person, but Henry was not. He pulled out his laptop long ago and he was plugged into the wall, working away. She looked at the people arriving from other flights. Maybe they were more interesting. A large group passed, hugs amongst themselves like candy. Arriving for a family reunion, she imagined. She rose and walked over to the water fountain. A little girl darted in front of her, mother in hot pursuit. Perhaps the pair had traveled cross country to see grandma, and the little one was taking advantage of finally getting out of the airplane. Imagination is sometimes better than life. Her life, anyway. Her life was boring. Her high heels tapped on the floor as she returned to her seat next to Henry. He hadn't even noticed she was gone. He smiled, and she laid her hand on his, and he smiled and returned to some very important email. Too busy to talk. She rolled her eyes and took a look around the baggage claim for something, anything interesting. A young man stood at the bottom of the escalator with a turquoise and blue bouquet of flowers. That was no airport flower shop arrangement. He stopped on his way. He was dressed to impress in all black, complementing his tidy jet black hair and olive skin. Self-assured, he craned his neck every time new arrivals appeared at the top of the escalator. One elderly man rolled past in a wheelchair, an old war injury, she imagined. "Those flowers for me?" the man boomed with a mischievous wink. The young man threw back his head and laughed. "But for my fiance." "Well done, son." "Thank you, sir." And they shook hands warmly. Poor kid's wait stretched for 30 minutes. Yet he kept his place with the patience of a century and watchfulness. Once Henry would have waited for her. He knew the lessons of love back then. Lips twisted, she tied and retied her scarf and retied it again. She shook her hands to stop fussing with the scarf and then looked back at the man at the bottom of the escalator. With the fiancé, she counted the flowers they'd forgotten on the floor. The fiancé grazed the young man's face with her fingertips. The young man's sparkling black eyes would not let go of her gentle brown ones. Perhaps the girl would be gone for a year, taking care of her elderly mother. She rose and walked toward the couple, mesmerized by their magical circle of love for two. Then she looked over at Henry, plugged into the wall. No, there was no magic circle of love in reality, at least not in her reality. The click of her heels echoed through the terminal until she stood in front of Henry. His hands froze above the keyboard. "You don't bring me flowers." He looked at her like she's sprouting wings. "You want flowers?" "The flower floor shop is right there." He pulled out his billfold. "Roses?" She gazed down for a long time, tracing the gray tile with the orange turf boot. She pinned her husband with her eyes. Daisies, Henry. I like daisies.
Thank you. Karen Zink and her husband John have been married for 42 years. They are literal snowbirds. They live about half the year in Tucson, Arizona, near their two children and four grandchildren. And the plan was to be in Kodiak during the summer months and spend winters back in Tucson. In Kodiak, they've been giving their time to the Baptist mission. They've been involved in summer day camps, working with visiting mission teams, and working in the kitchen that feeds an average of 60 to 80 people on a daily summer basis. Didn't know that. Karen also is a lead teacher at the preschool. Although the plan was to live half of the year in both places, their stay in Kodiak keeps increasing. Last year, they arrived in March, and they haven't left yet. When not at the mission, Karen enjoys long walks, drinking fancy coffee, and reading mystery novels. Ladies and gentlemen, Karen.
Okay, so lessons learned. And I am a preschool teacher. Mainly I've learned that little 3 and 4, sometimes 5-year-olds, are extremely literal and devastatingly honest. So I was getting ready for work one day, not feeling all that great about myself, so I'm like, whatever, throw on makeup, throw on a t-shirt, jeans, put my hair in a rubber band, and head off to work. One nice thing about preschoolers is they greet you like they haven't seen you in years. Miss Karen! Miss Karen! And then they're thrilled, you know, and you're like, it was yesterday. Okay. But they just can't control themselves. And this one little girl comes running up to me and she's like right in my face. Which reminded me that they have no concept of personal space. And she's staring at me. Oh, isn't that sweet? She says, Miss Karen, you look really old. To which I responded, thanks a lot. And she said, you're welcome. Because, you know, she was so proud of herself because we've been practicing, you know, please, thank you, you're welcome. And she was in the zone, man. She was like right there. So another time, it was right after Mother's Day. So one little girl comes running up to me. Miss Karen, we got my mom the most beautifulest, longest, shiniest necklace you ever saw. Really? And a rifle. Okay, big difference between Alaska kids and Tucson kids. But another time, we were in the classroom, and it was 9 in the morning or something, about springtime, and I'm looking out the window, and there's a deer with her little baby. This little fawn. And I'm like, yay, this is so exciting. Oh, you don't get that in Tucson. So I'm like, you guys, hurry, you guys see this, you guys see this. They come running, because they don't walk when they're 3, they only run. And it's so little guy. Meatballs. So my kids believe that. Last couple months, weeks, whatever, we have our tsunami, right? So it's like 8:39, it is pouring, right? So we're in school and we're just putting on, you know, parents are calling, you know, are you okay? Is anybody upset? We're like, no, we're having fun. Put in a DVD, pop some popcorn, have a party. It's great. So
most of them were okay, that's fine.
One dad, he's not feeling so great, so he comes in. And he goes up to his little daughter, and he's looking at her. And she's like, because there's a DVD on. And we get to watch TV. So she's like, you just have to wait, because it's not so important. So he finally gets her attention, and he says, honey, are you okay? I want to make sure there was silence going and stuff. She says, she takes his hands in the face. Daddy, it's okay. We're not going to have this for long, isn't it? I'm thinking, okay. No wonder, you know, meatballs coming out of the sky. So they not only have salamis, we have warnings. So we can't wait for them. You see this thing rolling in, you know? Okay. Don't know what's coming out of his own brain. But the best story ever, ever. And this one little guy, first day of school, he had a great day. Didn't cry, had a friend, made friends, everything was great. Mom comes at the end of the day, she can tell. He's like bouncing, he's so happy. She says, oh, I'm so glad you had such a good day at school. What is your favorite thing about this school? Thanks for a minute, he says. At this school, I get two hookers. And the mother looked at me, I looked at her, and she said, what do you mean? And I said, yeah, what do you mean? And he says, well, at my other school, I got one hook. You hang your coat, you hang your hat, you hang your backpack, but here I get two hookers. Because we all know the plural of hook gets hookers. So when it comes to learning lessons, for me, when I have something that I just really want to know, I just ask a 3-year-old.
Final speaker tonight is one of my favorite humans on the planet, Haley Foreman. Haley Foreman is a Kodiak native who has an intense pride for our emerald greenery and stormy skies, as well as a love for leaving on the jet without getting weathered in. When she's not working, she is out trying to experience a sunrise or sunset from a higher altitude. She also enjoys cuddling with her wonderful dog, Ollie, reading 2 pages of book, and going to bed night-night at 9:30 p.m. Here's Haley.
I have anxiety. So this is how it works. You overanalyze, you overthink, and you always think people are up to no good. So after I signed up, 2 weeks after I signed up in November, I had a dream that one person walked out of this speech, and I cried. So please don't move. Please. Thank you. So this starts after I moved back from a short stint in Southern California. I got my job back at Canna as their patient services representative. Like any 20-year-old, I work my way through the week to get to the weekend. On this Saturday in particular, I decided to enjoy a nice breakfast at a local eatery, King Center. After breakfast, I move forward doing something I don't normally do, which is shower. While showering, I experience this feeling in my throat. Now, it's not typical to just get sick right after you get home to Kodiak in March. Yeah. Kodiak likes to wrap its arms around you and give you the crud, so it's typical. But I can't shake this feeling in my throat. Post-shower, I decided to check it out. Now, I have these huge tonsils. Like, they are so great, I cannot breathe through my nose alone. Makes for great experiences, always. So upon looking in the mirror, my tonsils are doing what they do, which is taking over my mouth. But I have this flesh land bridge going from one tonsil to the next. This was not there before. normal person does when something's wrong. I go to WebMD. Upon searching, there is no article, surprisingly, about fleshy land bridge from one tunnel to the left, death stick in mouth, So next, I go to my mother, and she has anxiety. And she just shouts at me, you need to call the doctor. So as calmly as I can on a Saturday morning, I call the doctor, and they can get me in. At this point, I'm very thankful because I probably have 3 days to live. On our minute and a half drive, I think about what are the things I've done to deserve this. I tried smoking cigarettes a few times, but people smoke a lot, and you don't usually see death stick in mouth as like a consequence. So we get there, and I say hello to my coworker and try to seem normal. This could be the last time I see her. I get ushered in by the nurse, and she asks me the normal questions. How's it going? What's going on? And I calmly explain to her that I opened up my mouth, and there's something I've never seen before. So she does what any nurse would do, is ask me to open my mouth. Her reply is, may I please show another nurse? I say, sure. I mean, one of you guys might be the person who does the research, and there might be a WebMD article for the next unfortunate soul. Then the doctor comes in, and he's seeming quite chipper for someone who now knows my fate. He asks me typical questions, what happened, when did this start, and I tell him, I don't know, and this morning. He then asks me to open my mouth, obviously. And then he says, I have never seen anything like this. Neither has the internet. So then he gives me a nice, reasonable response. I'm going to try to pee it out. Cool. I don't have a medical degree. But usually when someone says I'm going to try to take something out, there's more preparation than just, I'm going to do it. Like maybe some Xanax or something, I don't know. Okay. So he takes these extremely long tweezers and reaches into my mouth. And the death stick land bridge does not put up a fight, but there's a definite dislodging. And it's gross. He takes a moment and he analyzes this fate, this object. And then he looks up at me and asks, did you have ham for breakfast?
Galley Table Storytelling is made possible through a partnership with the Kodiak Arts Council and Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation. Visit us online at galleytables.com to find the date and location of the next live storytelling event. You can also browse our archives and listen to past stories or sign up to be a storyteller. Galley Tables. Sharing stories and sharing life.